Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Asatara Satyashri Srimadis Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shandakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vishnu. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharya Nivasesa Sinyani Paskatyade Satana. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Rutal Padakamaram Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Sucha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Padichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sucha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
July 25th, 2013, Hilo, Hawaii. Over Skype, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, The Son of Drona Punished, Text 43. Uvacha chasahantyasya. Bandhananayansati. Muchyatam muchyatam esha. Brahmano nitaram guru.
Brahmano nitaram guru. Uvacha chasahantyasya.
Uvacha.
Uvacha.
Said. Cha. And. Asahanti. Being unbearable for her.
Asya.
His. Bandhana. Being bound. Anayanam.
Bringing him.
Sati. The devoted. Muchyatam.
Muchyatam.
Just get him released. Eshaha.
This.
Brahmanaha.
A Brahmana.
Nitaram.
Our.
Guruhu. Teacher. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. She could not tolerate Asvatthama's being bound by ropes. And being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a Brahmana, our spiritual master. Purport. As soon as Asvatthama was brought before Draupadi, she thought it intolerable that a Brahmana could be arrested like a culprit and brought before her in that condition, especially when the Brahmana happened to be a teacher's son. Arjuna arrested Ashvatthama knowing perfectly well that he was the son of Dronacharya. Krishna also knew him to be so. But both of them condemned the murderer without consideration of his being the son of a brahmana. According to revealed scriptures, a teacher or a spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or spiritual master. A guru is also called an acharya, or a person who has personally assimilated all the essence of shastras and has helped his disciples to adopt the ways. Ashvatthama failed to discharge the duties of a brahmana or teacher, and therefore he was liable to be rejected from the exalted position of a brahmana. On this consideration, both Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Ashvatthama. But to a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. By custom, Ashvatthama was offered the same respect as offered to his father. It was so because generally the people accept the son of a brahmana as a real brahmana by sentiment only. Factually, the matter is different. A brahmana is accepted on the merit of qualification and not on the merit of being simply the son of a brahmana. But in spite of all this, Draupadi desired that Ashvatthama be at once released, and it was all the same a good sentiment for her. This means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Uvacha chasahantyasha bandhan anayanam sati muchitam muchitam esha brahmano nitaram guru. She could not tolerate Ashvatthama's being bound by ropes, and being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a brahmana, our spiritual master. So here Prabhupada says, a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. This, of course, reminds us of Arjuna. Yes? Okay. So this statement here reminds us of a description of Draupadi's husband, Arjuna. So in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the last few verses 44 to 46, so Srila Prabhupada comments in a similar way, where Arjuna says, alas, how strange it is that we are preparing to commit greatly sinful acts. Driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness, we are intent on killing our own kinsmen. Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. Having spoken thus, he cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down on the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. And Srila Prabhupada says in these purports, driven by selfish motives, one may be inclined to such sinful acts as the killing of one's own brother, father, or mother. There are many such instances in the history of the world, but Arjuna, being a saintly devotee of the Lord, is always conscious of moral principles, and therefore takes care to avoid such activities. In the next purport, he said, Arjuna decided that even if attacked by the enemy in such an awkward position, he would not fight. He did not consider how much the other party was bent on fighting. All these symptoms are due to soft-heartedness resulting from him being a great devotee of the Lord. And in text 46 purport, Prabhupada says, such a kind and soft-hearted person in the devotional service of the Lord is fit to receive self-knowledge. So it seems that both with Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita and with Draupadi in today's verse, that this soft-heartedness is simultaneously praised and condemned. It's very difficult to understand. Are we supposed to be soft-hearted or not? Is it a great quality of a saintly person, or is it a sign of weakness? As Krishna told Arjuna, give up this miserly weakness. Is it a sign of somebody who's not very intelligent? Indeed, this is one of the main problems that affects us in our development of Krishna consciousness. this soft-heartedness or forgiveness, it's really here, forgiveness, where Prabhupada is saying here that the devotee can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally. And this is not just somebody stepping on your toe. This is somebody murdering all of your children. All of your children. So you have five sons, and the battle's over. They're sleeping. The war is over. Everything's been decided. And a member of the losing party comes at night while your children are sleeping and murders all of them in their beds. So when we say tolerate all sorts of tribulation, this is a pretty extreme tribulation. It's not like somebody took your parking space, or somebody took three cookies and you only had two, or, you know, your husband's upset because you burned the chapatis or something. You know, your children are murdered in their sleep for no reason. Just spite and envy and malice. In fact, Aswatthama's killing of the sons of Draupadi was condemned even by Duryodhana. He thought that Duryodhana would be happy when he presented the heads of Draupadi's sons. But on the contrary, Duryodhana was horrified, because after all, the Pandavas and the Kurus were related, and Duryodhana said, "Now you've killed the hope of our dynasty." So, what an extreme tribulation. I mean, not only for Draupadi personally, but for the world. These were the heirs to the throne. These were the hopes of the good governance for the whole population. They took such care in those times to make sure that there was proper marriage between suitable people, that there was proper samskaras to have a child who would be suitable. They took such care in the training and grooming of the children in the Gurukula from a young age. And five heirs, just like even today, just within the last few days, there was a baby born in Britain to the royal family, and it was a big deal. And one newspaper made a joke, "All right, so this is the big news, that a married woman of childbearing age gives birth to a boy. Wow." But it's not like that, because, of course, it is like that with the modern British royal family, but this concept that the birth of royal children is more important than the birth of ordinary children is true. So it was a calamity. It was a calamity for herself personally, a calamity for herself personally beyond imagining, and a calamity for the world. And yet, a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation, even up to that level, or the toleration Arjuna was tolerating at the Battle of Kurukshetra. So many times they had tried to be killed, and etc. But still, such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. So Arjuna said, you know, "Let them kill me unarmed and unresisting. I'm not going to hurt them." And Draupadi, as soon as she saw that Aswatthama was bound, she immediately said, I don't want to kill him." And of course, this is going to go on where she explains how they're indebted to Dronacharya, and this is the only son of Dronacharya. Dronacharya is dead, and Dronacharya's wife will then be not only widowed but childless. Whereas Draupadi, who's become childless, at least is not widowed. And she said, "I don't want Dronacharya's wife to cry like me over the death of her child. Let others not suffer as I am suffering," is Draupadi's mood, and Arjuna's mood as saintly persons. "Let them not suffer as I am suffering." The mood of the materialist is, "Let those who hurt me suffer how I am suffering. Let them suffer more than I am suffering." That is the mood of the materialist. In fact, if we want to say, what is the difference between a demon and a devotee? What's the difference between a materialist and a spiritual-minded person? We can put it on this. Do I take pleasure in the suffering of others who have hurt me? Or do I want no one to suffer as I am suffering, even the person who's the cause of my suffering? So again, this is very relevant to us, because this forgiveness is a very important quality of a devotee.
And yet it seems so impractical. In fact, here it's saying even that Krishna and Arjuna are taking a different stance. God himself and Arjuna, who's as saintly as Draupadi, is in this case taking the opposite position. And of course, Bhima will also take the opposite position. He'll side with the idea of punishing Ashwatthama. And these things seem opposite. What do we do? So how is it that this forgiveness, it's interesting, this word here, asahanti, being unbearable for her. She couldn't bear it. Whereas forgiveness is very much tied to the word tolerance, which you can tolerate. And it's a real key to advancement in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says in regard to Vasudev, when Kamsa was trying to kill Devaki, that you can understand the greatness of a person. You can estimate a person's greatness by their ability to tolerate difficult circumstances. Some words to that effect. Radha Swami has one of his favorite quotes. But there's a word, kshanta, not shanta, but kshanta, with a kus, like the kshatriya, kshanta. And this kshanta is in the description of a brahmana, this word kshanta, which Prabhupada generally translates as peacefulness. This word kshanta or kshanti is also one of the 9 symptoms of a devotee in bhava. So just in the previous verse, Draupadi was described as vama swabhava. And here vama, Prabhupada translates, it's beautiful. She has a beautiful name, her swabhava, her mood. Swa means own. Her own mood is beautiful. And this bhava of the devotees, this love of the devotees, is kshanti, tolerance. Prabhupada translates it, this word kshanti, in terms of a symptom of bhava, as being very patient and perseverant. But he also translates it in the Madhya Lila, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining the qualities of one in bhava, as forgiveness. This kshanti is forgiveness, patience, tolerance, perseverance, peacefulness. The Buddhists focus on this word kshanti as one of their primary attributes. And they write and talk about kshanti as no matter how much you are harmed by others, you never retaliate. You never harm others in return. So extreme tolerance and perseverance, extreme forgiveness. And this is actually the definition of forgiveness, that you only wish good to others, even to your enemy. Such devotees, as Prabhupada says here, such devotees are never, never unkind to others, even to the enemy. They wish only good for others. In fact, what is it that Draupadi is not tolerating? Asahanti. What is it that's unbearable for her? What's unbearable for her is not the death of her children, the heirs to the throne. What's unbearable for her is that someone else is suffering. That is what's unbearable for her. So we must come to this platform. Prabhupada, as we read before in Bhagavad Gita, end of the last purport in the first chapter, Prabhupada says that such a soft-hearted person is fit to receive transcendental knowledge. It should be obvious that such forgiveness is very much part of humility. And who is more tolerant than the tree, lower than the straw in the street? Amani na mani dena, who's not asking for any respect for themselves, but giving all respect to others. It's a very similar concept, that no matter how much I am hurt, I remain peaceful. Kshanti. And yet my ashanti, my asahanti, is if others suffer. Now we have a problem with this concept, because this concept is also related to a weakness. In fact, in these purports, Srila Prabhupada, as he does in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and as Krishna himself does, both glorifies them and condemns them. And indeed, I think that we who are wanting to be devotees of the Lord have a very similar struggle. We glorify this soft-heartedness. Prabhupada refers to it with Arjuna as being soft-hearted, and he refers to it in this particular section in Prabhupada's lectures on this, on these verses, as also soft-heartedness. And as Krishna condemns it in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada also condemns it. He says that Draupadi is acting this way because she's a woman, which is also interesting that although she's a pure devotee, of course she's eternally woman, it's not just some designation, but she has the soft-hearted nature of a woman. In fact, Prabhupada, in speaking on this verse, talks about Sita Devi and how Sita Devi, the internal energy of the Lord, is also a naturally soft-hearted woman. Of course, the ultimate Radharani, who's the ultimate feminine epitome of the feminine, is extremely soft-hearted. But Prabhupada condemns this soft-heartedness. In fact, when talking about Radharani, Lakshmiji, Sita Devi, we're talking about those real and ultimate women, Prabhupada says that such women require protection because their soft-heartedness can lead them to be easily misled. Prabhupada talks about this in the argument between Sati and Shiva, where Sati goes off to her father's sacrifice. And Prabhupada says that those who are soft-hearted, they may not have discrimination, and therefore they need someone to protect them. So what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to consider this soft-heartedness simply a lack of discrimination? Where Draupadi is saying he's a brahmana, he's a guru. How can you bind up a brahmana and a guru even if he's a murderer? And then at the same time, this very quality is necessary for spiritual advancement. It's a prerequisite for spiritual advancement, and it's a symptom of spiritual advancement. What do we do? Does it mean to become spiritually advanced that we lose our discrimination? And are those who tend to be more soft-hearted, namely women, is that a disqualification for spiritual life or a qualification for spiritual life? It's so confusing. Let's look first at the second point in terms of people who are naturally soft-hearted, particularly women. And Prabhupada often makes the point that women tend to be more soft-hearted than men. Of course, that's a general statement. There are hard-hearted women and soft-hearted men. It's not that every single woman is more soft-hearted than every single man. But there's that tendency. What do we mean by soft-hearted? We mean that one can be easily swayed one way or the other. As Prabhupada said, Prabhupada defines soft-heartedness as being very easily led or misled. That one is likely to be a follower. Oh, okay, we'll do that. Oh, okay, we'll do that. And also here, of course, he's defining soft-heartedness as very forgiving. But in terms of being of having not discrimination of what is right and what is wrong, just going with anybody and therefore needing a good leader. So in that, certainly, it's a spiritual disqualification. And such persons are in need of guidance. Prabhupada compares soft-hearted women to children who need proper guidance. Of course, at the present time in Kali Yuga, we don't find real brahmanas, real kshatriyas. And we've seen, even in our history, in the Hare Krishna movement, that even when very intelligent men, who are not particularly soft-hearted in the sense of lacking discrimination, that when they remove themselves from getting proper guidance, they become bewildered and concoct some new philosophy. And we've seen this over and over and over again. We've seen men who are Sanskrit scholars and know the Shastra and so forth and so on. And as soon as they think, now I'm independent, and they remove themselves from proper guidance, they become bewildered and they become misled. So this soft-heartedness in that sense of lacking discrimination and needing to always be under the protection of proper guidance certainly applies to practically everybody at the present time. This is certainly one reason why Srila Prabhupada has founded the sometimes very troublesome and difficult Society of Devotees, which we may chafe at occasionally. Why do we have to deal with this? But this society, having a sangha of devotees, is a definitely a kind of protection for all of us. If someone thinks, I am very great and I don't need protection, they're a fool. Even in former times, the kshatriyas kept themselves under the guidance of the brahmanas, the brahmins under the guru. There was always the sangha to protect each other. Nobody was thinking that they were independent. But we can say, still relatively speaking, that women are very easily misled. It's very easy for a woman to just think, oh yeah, this is someone who loves me. This is someone who cares about me, when the person is actually harming her. And this, women are much more likely to be conned than men. So that's definitely a disqualification. One requires a great amount of discrimination. And it's, by the way, this is what Prabhupada calls less intelligence of women. This tendency to just say, oh, okay, sure, in a submissive way, and not do what is right, not follow what is right. Prabhupada's not talking about less intelligence of women in IQ terms. He's talking about spiritual discrimination. So we should have discrimination, man, woman, whatever. And the main discrimination we should have is to put ourselves under proper authority. If we put ourselves under proper authority, then whatever we may be, and however much discrimination we may have, is counteracted. Of course, you could say, well, that just removes the problem. One has to have the discrimination to put oneself under proper authority. But what can be done? There has to be somebody in society who does have some discrimination and who sets up systems of proper guidance and authority to protect those who have less amounts of discrimination. I mean, that has to be done, and if it's not done, people are going to suffer. But at the same time, this soft-heartedness is very much a qualification for bhakti, and it's in fact the symptom of bhakti. Rupa Goswami discusses at length the fact that as the devotee advances, the heart melts. And there's so many statements from Srila Prabhupada, from Rupa Goswami, that the heart has to melt. The heart has to be soft-hearted. In fact, we could say that those who are very advanced are soft-hearted to the point that they don't even see anybody but good people. They don't see evil people at all. I mean, here Draupadi's seeing Ashwatthama as a brahmana and guru in terms of custom, although I don't think that's what's really going on here. I think what's really going on here is not that Draupadi's stupid. She's a kshatrani after all. But simply that she's operating on the saintly platform. The other is just superficial. But the Uttama Bhakta, they see that everyone is a saint. They actually see that everybody is a devotee. Everybody is properly situated. That's the ultimate manifestation of soft-heartedness. For some service of the Lord, they may take on the external manifestation of dealing with friends and enemies, just like Prahlad Maharaj was condemning in his father and his teachers this concept of friends and enemies. But when Prahlad Maharaj was made the king of the demons on the order of Nrsingadev, he certainly had to deal with friends and enemies and punishment and justice and so forth and so on. He had to. That was his duty. Just like Arjuna has to deal with it. And ultimately, Draupadi as a kshatrani has to deal with it also. And this particular lila gives us a very nice example, one of many, of how these two are balanced in practical daily affairs. After all, if you're on the platform of an Uttama Adhikari, functioning on that platform, you're not going to be running a government. You're not going to be managing something in terms of justice and fairness, because it's not how you're operating. The way you're operating on that platform is whatever happens to me is the will of the Lord, and I'm tolerant and peaceful and perseverant. As Mahaprabhu says with the Trinada P verse, if a tree wants water, if a tree is thirsty, it never asks for water. Like Madhavendra Puri, who never asked for food. And if a tree is cut down, it doesn't protest. So this Trinada P verse is that if you have an internal problem, you never complain. If someone else harms you, you never retaliate. There was a very famous Jain, Mahavir, who this was his primary practice. We find this sort of practice described in the Bhagavatam, this Jeta Yoga that was performed by, say, Rishabhdev. People were throwing stool at him, and he didn't retaliate. Maharaj Yudhisthira, in fact, took up this kind of external practice at the end of his life. So one in this sort of consciousness is not really functioning in the world. Because people will say, well, if you really exhibit this kind of consciousness, how is that practical? Well, the answer is it isn't. That kind of consciousness is suited for the spiritual world. And to function in the material world, which is full of criminals, externally like that, doesn't work. You're then an avaduta. You're not functioning within the society. Of course, there can be some persons who are acting in the role of brahmanas and teachers who don't have to administer justice. And they can more or less externally behave like this and still be within the social system. So if one is a brahmana, then in fact, again, kshanti is the first qualification of a brahmana. So a brahmana is expected, even externally, not to the extent, perhaps, of an avaduta, but the brahmana is expected to be forgiving. Forgiving meaning whatever is done to me, I'm willing to tolerate, and I never want harm to anyone, not even to an enemy. But those who are acting in other capacities are not able to act simply like that. Prabhupada often makes this point that the kshatriya cannot be nonviolent. And in this particular story, in this particular lila, as well as in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say, no, you cannot just excuse Aswatthama. Just because you have this mood that no one, even my enemy, should ever suffer. That's a wonderful mood. Keep the mood. But externally, this man needs some punishment. He's disturbing everything. He's killing off the heirs to the throne. I mean, we just went through this big war to establish the Pandavas as the rulers of the world. And now he's going to wreck the whole thing. He's killed all the Pandava's sons, and he's made an attempt to kill their only grandson, who's in utero. This is not just a private matter of your own personal grief that you may be willing to tolerate. You may be happily tolerating, but this is a matter of the will of the Lord for the good of the world. And therefore, this person has to be restrained. They have to be stopped from doing further mischief. They have to be rectified. Of course, even those who are completely operating on the platform of forgiveness may desire the rectification of the other person for the good of the other person. Just like we have Narada Muni, who gave the so-called curse to Nalakuvera and Manigriva. Of course, in one sense, it wasn't really a curse, because he said, you're going to become trees in Nandamaraj's courtyard and you're going to see God personally. So that doesn't sound like a curse to me. Although on a material level, certainly that could be understood as some kind of a punishment. You know, just stay there. All right, go there and stay there. But it wasn't Narada Muni desiring harm for them. There was no question of Narada desiring harm for them. We do see, of course, that sometimes brahmanas do curse in a way that they lose their facility of kshanti. So this is a price that must be paid if one wants to enter into higher realms of bhakti, and it's a symptom by which we can judge our own advancement and the advancement of others. It's one of the primary symptoms that Mahaprabhu gives of advanced devotional service. When somebody criticizes us, when somebody hurts us, when someone does something to interfere in our life, what is it we cannot tolerate? What can we tolerate and what can we not tolerate? An advanced devotee does not tolerate anyone else's suffering, and they can tolerate any tribulation for themselves. Toleration doesn't mean gritting your teeth. Toleration meaning it doesn't bother you at all. I had said that Jed Barrett, interestingly enough, Jed Barrett, who was also performing this kind of Jeta Yoga, when Maharaj Rahugan insulted him, it's explained in the Bhagavatam, in the purport, or maybe it's in the verse, that he felt some waves of dissatisfaction in his mind. But still, he tolerated them, and still did good to Maharaj Rahugana by instructing him. So the mind may feel some, the false ego, the mind may feel some irritation and fear and disturbance when somebody harms me. But the devotee doesn't take it very seriously. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, or long for them just when they disappear. The devotee doesn't take it seriously. Oh, that's just the modes of nature. How can I do good for my so-called enemy? And in some cases, doing good for your so-called enemy means that they have to get some consequence. But the mood is, how can I do good for them? I don't want to tolerate their suffering. I can tolerate anything. Tatain ukampam su samikshamai. Dayabhak. One will inherit the kingdom of God if one acts in that way. Now we should have a caveat that this doesn't mean that devotees, that if somebody is beating you and trying to kill you, that you have to stand there. That's not what it means. Our body belongs to God, and we have a duty to defend the property of Krishna that he's given us to take care of. Doesn't say that people should voluntarily stay in abusive or dangerous situations if they have the capacity to leave. That's not what we're saying. But we're saying the mood is always, I cannot tolerate the suffering of others, even if the person is causing me suffering. And I will happily tolerate whatever difficulties comes to me as the will of the Lord for my benefit, and I will never hate the instrument of my own karma. I will never hate the instrument of the Lord's will, but rather I will always seek to do good for others. So within a typical day, for most people, there's at least minor irritations, minor difficulties. If Draupadi could be so forgiving with such a heinous and horrible, horrible in terms, again, of her personal life. These are her children, her only children, all of her children. And horrible in terms of her service. She's conceived and born and raised these children to be the guides of society as service to her beloved friend Krishna. And before they could take up that role when they were still young, it was finished. So if Draupadi could be forgiving and loving in such circumstance, can we not be at the much more minor irritations of life? Will we ever have to face anything as devastating as Draupadi's faced? And yet how she is caring. She's caring for Asvatthama. She's caring for Asvatthama's mother. She's full of gratitude for all of the help of Dronacharya. This is the mood of a devotee. So we are very fortunate that Krishna gives us so many opportunities to practice this mood, which is the only way that we are fit to attain to higher levels of bhakti and transcendental knowledge, and is the main symptom of whether or not we are actually in Krishna consciousness or whether we are simply going through the motions. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes.
Hare Bol, good morning. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Mata, I was just wondering, like, what is the difference between somebody that's just emotional and somebody that's truly soft-hearted? Because you said, yeah, women are soft-hearted, but I know women are a little bit more emotional also. But I have also, you know, I have also known some devotee men that I know that it's hard for them to speak at Srila Prabhupada's, you know, they start crying or something like this. They, you know, they feel sad. But so, can you tell me, Mata?
Well, they're very related. Being emotional and being soft-hearted. In other words, your heart is guided by your emotions rather than just some sort of hard logic. You know, you're guided by your sense of forgiveness. Again, it depends on how it's used. On the material level, being soft-heartedness is a problem. It's a disqualification. It means basically that you're a fool. But on the spiritual level, it's the greatest indication of whether or not you're in love with Krishna. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was criticized by the Mayavadi sannyasis for being soft-hearted and being emotional. Sentimental is the English word Prabhupada uses. So sentimental, emotional, soft-hearted, it's all the same thing, really. What is the difference? Okay, so if you think about someone who's just emotional in a negative way, so somebody hurts them or offends them and they just get all angry and emotional. They don't have logic to look at things in a very clear way. But soft-heartedness, somebody insults you and offends you and you forgive them and you wish them well. That is saintliness. You can say that that's also not looking at things in a logical way, but it's looking at things in a saintly way. So I think of it as gyan, or knowledge, and just pure knowledge, pure thought, as being sort of this neutral position. Pure consciousness, pure thought, gyan. And on the material side is the material emotions, which cloud material intelligence, which make you act instinctively, almost like an animal or like a young child who just acts on the basis of their feelings governed by the modes of material nature. And that kind of being emotional is a lack of discrimination. It's a lack of intelligence. Somebody who's very materially emotional needs to be protected and guided by somebody who's more materially rational. And so people sometimes think that therefore the goal is to become total rational. You know, just to be a computer, basically, without emotions. In fact, you see that in most civilized societies, one of the marks of civilization is to what extent you hide or control your emotions and just act on the rational platform. But that's not very satisfying. Therefore, there's outlets in every human civilized society for displays of strong emotions, like sporting events and weddings or taking some intoxicant. But our concept of spirituality is extreme emotion. A very extreme emotion. That's not subject to, that's overriding, you could say, material discrimination and even material morality with the gopis who are running to Krishna and so forth. You know, very extreme emotion that one is, you know, it's described in the Bhagavatam, without dancing and laughing and dancing, like, singing like a madman without caring for the opinion of others. So that's extreme emotion. But that material, that spiritual emotion, it's like the 180 degrees from the material emotion. It's past the neutral stage of gyan. Those who are, those like Draupadi who are displaying this compassion for Asvatthama, she's not affected by material emotions. She's above the modes of material nature. She's not emotional in a material sense. Nor is Arjuna when he says, I will not fight. So the emotions of Mother Yasoda, the emotions of the cowherd boys, of Akura, they're not on what we would call materially emotional. So therefore we can see being soft-hearted and emotional as a disqualification if it means that your material emotions are overpowering your material intelligence. But we can also see even the material being materially emotional as a possible qualification if you're then attracted to developing the spiritual emotions. Because then you're going to be attracted more to bhakti rather than to gyan. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mata.
Yes, Mother Urmila. Harsh Prabhu wanted to ask a question. Harsh, you're unmuted on our side.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
This is regarding the attitude of Bhima. He was always ready to fight as a Vaishnava. And secondly, when we say that a Vaishnava is supposed to tolerate all insults, as far as we remember in Mahabharata, Draupadi was not able to tolerate the insult of her being disrobed. So now, how do we understand as Kshatrani she is able to tolerate the death of her sons? So attitude of Bhima and previous attitude of Draupadi.
Okay, very nice. Just the kind of thoughtful, analytical question that I would expect from you. So we were saying that the devotees who are acting as something in the world other than an avaduta or perhaps as a brahmana, they also have to be interested in justice. They have to be interested in having an atmosphere, because in the spiritual world, there's no justice. There's no need for justice. There's no moral codes. But when you're functioning as a pure devotee in the material world, you have a duty and an obligation to have justice and fairness. The brahmanas are not so inclined like that. The brahmanas are going to be mostly forgiving. But Bhima and Draupadi as kshatriyas, that has to be their way of acting. Prabhupada talks about this a lot, how the kshatriyas cannot be nonviolent. So the inner mood of Bhima and Draupadi is indeed forgiving. And Draupadi doesn't want harm to come even to the Kurus, but that's her duty. Now, in this case, with Asvatthama, it's a little different with the just looking first at Draupadi. So when Draupadi was insulted, you have to remember that Dushasana and Duryodhana, they were in the position of rulers. They were ruling over the people. It's not her position to tolerate that someone's ruling over the people who's insulting a woman. How are they going to rule over the people? They're supposed to protect the women. So that's not to be tolerated. And Bhima also had this mood that cannot be tolerated. They're not, it, personally they could tolerate. They're Vaishnavas. But they have a role in the Lord's pastimes. And sometimes, even in such circumstances like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, as Prabhupada describes it, his saintly compassion overrode his duty. And he was, it's like, I don't want to do this duty. I just want to be a saintly, compassionate person. You know, sometimes we have this also as devotees, especially if we are very brahminically inclined. But even if we, no matter what, you know, as we advance in devotional service, one is not so interested to do things in the world that require acting in ways different than saintliness externally. Like Prabhupada says, the Vaishya has to tell lies or they can't make a profit, you know. And if that's your duty in the world and you become saintly, you may just feel disgusted. Well, I don't want to do this. That may come sometimes. Arjuna's like, I don't want to fight. Let them just kill me, you know, who cares? Why would I want to kill someone? Why do I want them to be harmed? And then Krishna said, wait a minute. You know, yes, I'm glad you feel that way as a saintly person, but really, saintliness is acting for my pleasure. And Arjuna's like, yes, my illusion is now dispelled. I can act for your pleasure without some personal mood of vengeance and personal mood of harm. That's basically the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. You're not caring for your own victory or defeat. You're not caring for honor and dishonor. You're fighting simply because it's the will of the Lord. Now, in this case with Asvatthama, there was no need to punish him in terms of their duty to the world in the same way. The need wasn't there. Asvatthama wasn't ruling the world. Now, there was some need, of course, for him to be punished, because he was causing such havoc in the world. And there was some need for him to be punished because for his own benefit. And therefore, Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima insisted that Asvatthama have to receive some kind of punishment. So we see this, so it was basically the pull that's happening in this particular instance with Draupadi is very much like what happened with Arjuna on the Battle of Kurukshetra. But generally, the devotees, when they're acting as kshatriyas, they have to take that mood of justice. When the Pandavas, including Bhima, when they retired from ruling the world, they all took this position of Jada Yoga. They all took this position of acting as if they were, you know, deaf and dumb and mad and so forth. And they no longer took any action against anybody, including those who hurt them directly. It's interesting in the Ramayana, when Ram is exiled to the forest and the sages ask him for protection from the demons, and Sita asks Ram, why have you vowed to protect the sages when you're not acting as the king? She said, here in the forest, you're living as an ascetic. You're not living as a king. So you have no business with this fighting and protection. And Ram said, well, I've already given my word, and even though I'm in the forest still, I'm still acting as in the royal order. So it's a question of service. And the devotee is happy to do any service for Krishna. But for the devotee's own self, they have no interest, and that is also with Bhima. Of course, another answer with Bhima is that Bhima is an individual, and he has his own nature, which is different from that of Arjuna and different from that of Yudhisthira. He's an individual person. But Bhima doesn't have a vengeful nature. It's not that he ever has a mood, or Draupadi has a mood of vengeance, although it may appear like that externally, or it may even be expressed like that externally. That's lila. That's not their mood. That's their lila in service. But that excellent question. Thank you.
Some more questions coming in. This comes from Mother Anu, who is in India. She is asking, number one, how to become tolerant. You know, in other words, very attracted to what you're saying. And then the other thing is that if you become tolerant in the world, people will dump on us. So I guess what you're saying is that, you know, you make yourself vulnerable by being tolerant.
And that disturbs our spiritual practice.
What was that last thing?
Let's see. One more. In our daily, we come across many situations that will disturb our spiritual practice.
Okay, so it was, how do we become tolerant? If we get tolerant, won't we get dumped on? And then there's many things that disturb our spiritual practice. I'm not really sure what that last question is. So how do we become tolerant? And if we get tolerant, we'll be dumped on. Well, let's look at the second part first, because why would we want to be tolerant if we feel that being tolerant will just mean we'll get dumped on? So In answer to does being tolerant mean we'll get dumped on, I will say we get dumped on anyway. Whether you are tolerant or not tolerant, you're going to get dumped on. Now, perhaps if you're an extremely nasty, angry, vengeful, hateful person, perhaps people will become so afraid of you and so afraid of dealing with you that they'll just stay away from you and you won't get dumped on as much. Maybe. It's possible. What I see is that even very angry, hateful, and nasty people also get dumped on. In fact, when you're angry and nasty and vengeful and hateful, generally, people don't really care about you as much. And you're more likely to get dumped on, and you're less likely to have anybody help you out. But you can just look at your life. Do you get dumped on more if you're forgiving? You're going to get dumped on, you're going to get dumped on. I mean, just it's going to happen. So why not act in such a way that when I get dumped on, I remain happy? Why give the dumper the power to hurt me? I don't require to be hurt just because somebody dumps on me. Whether or not I'm hurt is a question of my own response to being dumped on. Otherwise, try to find a situation where you're going to protect yourself from ever being dumped on. Good luck. People dump on God, so I don't think it's going to happen. People attack God. So the question is not, how can I set up my life so nobody dumps on me? Forget it. The question becomes, how can I respond to being dumped on so that I remain peaceful and happy? So that other people don't have the power to hurt me. Not because I've tied up their hands, but because I have a shield. And that shield is forgiveness. When one is forgiving, one doesn't feel the pain. Or one feels it very slightly and very temporarily. Then we become, like Prabhupada said, like the lotus leaf in the water. The water just goes off of it. It's like your forgiveness creates like a waxed surface. Also, frankly, it's very difficult for people to continue to dump on you unless they're really demons, unless they really have severe problems, when you're forgiving. Being forgiving, in most cases, for most people, most of the time, neutralizes the other person's anger. Neutralizes the other person's behavior, generally, not always. If it was always, then nobody would ever beat up on God or saintly persons, and they certainly do. Jesus was crucified. Haridas Thakur was beaten in the marketplaces. We are not offering some kind of guarantee that nobody will beat up on you in the material creation. That's not the promise. The promise is not become a devotee of the Lord and become forgiving and then nobody will hurt you anymore. The promise is become forgiving and you will not be hurt. You will not experience hurt. You will experience love. You will experience joy. You will experience peace. Which is a heck of a lot better defense than anger and vengeance. And how do you do it? Practice it. It's our natural situation. We are forgiving by nature. We are souls. When you practice it because it's natural, it'll get easier and easier till gradually it will become your automatic response. And in the beginning, like anything else, it will be hard. Poison at the beginning, nectar at the end. In the beginning, it will feel artificial and difficult. And as you practice it, it will get easier and easier. And even after your very practice, there may be some circumstances where you mess up and then you get back up again. I give an example all the time of a child learning how to walk. I know how to walk, but I still trip sometimes. So even if you become very practiced, if you mess up sometimes, you don't get discouraged. You pick up and go on walking. So make a conscious effort. When somebody harms me, start thinking, I wish well for them, I wish well for them, I wish well for them. May they be happy, may they be happy, may they be happy. And practice it. And as far as things that disturb our spiritual life is within. Ahoy tu kiya pratiyata. The definition of pure bhakti is it's uninterrupted. It cannot be interrupted. If you really have love, it cannot be interrupted. If something can interrupt our devotion, it means our devotion is not very strong. Again, in this world, there will be so many things that externally interrupt our devotion. Even if you go away from everybody and go to a cave in the Himalayas, you might see some baby, orphan baby deer, and then your devotion gets interrupted by that. The biggest interruption to our devotion is within our own mind and heart. And if our mind and heart is uninterrupted, nothing externally can interrupt us. This is even true materially. If you are completely devoted to something materially, nobody can sway you from that. If you're absorbed in thinking about some material attachment, it can be uninterrupted. We've all had this experience that we're thinking about something, we're absorbed in it, it's taken over our consciousness, and while we're eating, while we're talking, while we're walking, while we're working, no matter what situation we're in and what happens, we're absorbed in it. To think that somebody else or some other circumstance can interrupt our devotion, it doesn't make sense. Now, obviously, we're enjoyed asatsanga tyaga. We're enjoined to associate with the devotees and avoid the association of materialists. But we are also enjoined to preach and to be compassionate. So this has to be balanced. We are enjoined to associate with materialistic persons to help them. I hope that answers your question. We could take one more.
Anything else, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, Mother Urmila, thank you for a wonderful class. You talked about this seemingly contradiction between soft-heartedness and discrimination. And unless I miss something, you please correct me. But it looks like it just can be only that contradiction, material soft-heartedness. In a spiritual, it's Krishna takes care of everything else and gives discrimination. Is that correct? That's what you were saying, and maybe I missed?
Well, that's very beautifully put. But I was also talking about material, that on the material level, for someone who's not on the level of Draupadi, is being soft-heartedness a good or a bad thing on the material level? And it's both. Soft-heartedness is a bad thing because it means that you can be easily misled, that you don't have very much discrimination. But it's a good thing because it can help you to become forgiving and make you a fit candidate for receiving transcendental knowledge. So it's both a good thing and a bad thing. It depends on what you're doing with it and how it's used. On the spiritual level, soft-heartedness is only a good thing. And yes, Krishna provides whatever discrimination is needed. And if you're spiritually soft-hearted, you actually have perfect discrimination. Is that clear? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.